Now let's go to London, where the clock is ticking down, and at last tonight, the scale of the opposition to Theresa May's Brexit deal will be made clear, because nobody really expects that her withdrawal deal is going to get Parliament's consent. Our London correspondent Fiona Mitchell has more. Now, Fiona, talk us through the technicalities, because there are a number of amendments. Will they be taken first? So what happens from 7 o'clock tonight?
Yes, well, we the day of debate, the final day of debate, gets underway now, and then at around 6:30 that debate starts to wrap up. Theresa May will be the last person to speak to try to plead with MPs once again not to reject her deal. Then at 7 o'clock, MPs start to trail out into the voting area of the House of Commons to start to cast their ballots. Now, they will begin by voting on a number of amendments. We've literally just found out in the last couple of moments that there will be 4 amendments. There had been 13 on the order paper, but it is the right of the Speaker of the House. He is the person who decides what amendments are to be included. So that has been whittled down from 13 to 4. They will be voted on first, approximately 15 to 20 minutes each. Of course, some of those could potentially be withdrawn in the meantime. Then there will be the substantive vote on whether or not MPs accept or reject this. So probably around 9 o'clock tonight, we would expect to have some sort of result.
And the two amendments in particular that strike me as being significant, Amendment B from Conservative former minister Sir Edward Lee. This notes the Irish border backstop is temporary and calls for the UK government to give notice on the 1st of January 2022 that it would terminate the withdrawal treaty if the EU will not agree to remove the backstop. And there's another one from another Tory MP, John Barron, which again seeks to give the UK the right to terminate the Irish border backstop. Those two amendments, if passed, would certainly change the nature of this withdrawal agreement significantly from Ireland's point of view.
Well, of course, it would mean that it is not the withdrawal agreement that had been agreed with the EU, which would mean that Theresa May would have to go back to Brussels and say it's been agreed, but on this basis. But ultimately, nobody expects those amendments to be passed. But what they do indicate, or start to give an indication of, is who might be willing to sign up if the backstop was removed completely. In a way, it starts to give an indication of the vote and perhaps maybe reduce the number of people who would vote against the deal. And because at this point the government knows that they are not going to get this through, there's two things that it wants to do. It wants to start getting an indication of what it might be able to go back to Brussels and say this would be acceptable to MPs. It also, of course, wants to scale back on the number of MPs who vote against the government, because the numbers really do matter. A loss of 200 for Theresa May tonight would be absolutely devastating. The unusual political times in which we live suggest that a loss of maybe 60 or 70 would be something that Theresa May could then argue was almost a win, because these would be MPs that she would perhaps be able to win back. Normally, of course, a loss on that scale for a British government on an absolutely key piece of legislation, perhaps the most key piece of legislation in the post-war period, would seem incredible to talk about a loss of 60 being some sort of a win. But that is where we find ourselves, Anya.
And indeed, most observers predicting a loss in the three figures, which would be unprecedented, I think, since the 1930s or 1920s or something like that. Let's stick with the present. Democratic Unionist leader Arlene Foster, she was out again today repeating her opposition to what she calls the toxic backstop, and repeating that the 10 DUP MPs will vote against Mrs May tonight. Let's have a listen, and then I'll put some questions to you about the DUP.
The Irish Prime Minister has indicated that he will not be putting up a hard border on the island of Ireland. You know, as someone who lived through the Troubles, we never had a hard border. There were 20,000 soldiers in Northern Ireland, and they couldn't hermetically seal the border in Northern Ireland. So it is a bit of a nonsense, frankly, to talk about a hard border. What we should be looking at are ways to use technology. And I know some people get very uptight when we talk about technology, but we are living in the modern world. We should be using technology. We should be using our intelligence. We should be using risk analysis in terms of the single market, which they want to protect. I understand that. But, you know, to suggest that we will have a return to the borders of the past, when, of course, the borders of the past were there for a completely different reason. They were there to stop terrorists. They were there to stop the flow of Semtex as opposed to the flow of powdered milk. So for people who talk about the borders of the past, it does quite upset those of us who live in Northern Ireland, where progress has been made in a very meaningful and tangible way. And I do, I have to say, find it distasteful when I hear the Prime Minister and some of her ministers talk about life in Northern Ireland changing. How so? How so if we're still part of the United Kingdom? And for me, we need to choose reason and choose hope as opposed to choosing fear and narrowness and look to the future in a very positive way.
Democratic Unionist leader Arlene Foster maintaining her opposition to the backstop and to Mrs May's withdrawal deal, although interesting to hear her talking about the technology and so on there. Fiona Mitchell no longer with us, but our political correspondent Micheál Lehane is. I remember Sammy Wilson having rings run round him, to the best of my recollection, when Brexit expert Katie Hayward was there talking about the implications that a hard Brexit would have on the island, and that technology wasn't the answer that the DUP appear to believe it is. But nonetheless, we all wait for the outcome in London, Micheál, and the Cabinet here has been considering what we'll do if they can't do a deal.
They have, and that Cabinet meeting just concluded around 1 o'clock, and it was an extensive one, and what they were discussing was comprehensive, going into the kind of detail now we think that hasn't been looked at before, particularly around the areas of transport and trying to ensure ways where you have minimum disruption if there is a hard Brexit, and also ensuring that you have supply of medicines into the country, particularly those that could run low in stocks if something were to happen after March 29th. As of now, there are arrangements in place to ensure that continuity of supply and medicines, the Department of Health say. Transport is a different story, but efforts being made to ensure that at least the disruption could be minimised. And I think a lot of that will come down to the design at the ports and airports of the new checks that will inevitably or would inevitably have to be put in place if there were no deal reached. That's the kind of detail that was discussed today. We expect the opposition will be briefed on it sometime after 5 o'clock by the Taoiseach Simon Coveney. But the big, huge piece of legislation that encompasses all that, it's not expected that that will be published until sometime next month.
And even though Fianna Fáil has already been very critical of the government for what they say is a lack of preparation for a no-deal Brexit and that they want to see more detail and so on, is there some sense in Leinster House that one thing that has become clear in this month of interminable debate on an outcome that is certain, the only question how large, one thing that has become certain, there's no majority in the House of Commons for no deal?
That is certain, and that is a point that was emphasised once again by the Labour leader Brendan Howlin when he was speaking to the media this morning. And he had some interesting things to say too about the British Labour Party. He says he expects that they would table a no-confidence motion in the British government soon after the meaningful vote, if, as expected, is defeated tonight. And he said if that is unsuccessful, and he believes it would be looking at the numbers, then his understanding, having attended the Labour conference, is that the next step for the British Labour Party then should be calling for a second referendum on EU membership. Others around here, less clear on what the next steps will be in Britain. Well, you'd have to say there is still a clear sense here, though, that no deal is unlikely, but no one able to piece together any picture or narrative that may enable that to happen right now.
Do you think there's a growing belief, hope perhaps, in government circles that however this is resolved, it's probably not going to be resolved by the end of March, and the one thing that is needed is more time, an extension of some sort to the Article 50 withdrawal process?
that is being spoken about. Of course, officially, that not much being said ahead of that vote tonight. The Irish government keen not to be in any way influential or to say anything before it. But that is one of the things that is being spoken about. I suppose you can read something into the fact that the omnibus piece of legislation, that the piece that encompasses, we'll say, 16 primary pieces of legislation, 45 proposals and up to 60 changes, that huge body of work, that when that or if that ultimately makes its way into the Dáil, well then that seriously will be a red flag as to the future. Government going to hold off for as long as possible in doing that, possibly until the first week in March, hoping that it will never be necessary to actually take that step, of course.
And isn't it, again, one of these curious historical ironies that 100 years on from the first Dáil meeting almost, we're back at a situation where the Irish question is at the heart of British politics, and the stalemate, our politics very much in suspension until this question resolved in the Westminster Parliament.
Exactly, and I think that was very evident this morning when the early celebrations of that centenary of the first Dáil were taking place on the plinth. There was a Model T car from the period as well there, and people in costumes. But again, it's the uncertain future that is dominating politics here, and not a lot of other legislative work is going to go through the Dáil or the Shannon in the weeks ahead. Everything really, as you say, suspended until there is a clearer picture, not a clear picture, but perhaps a clearer one as to what's going to happen in Britain.
Yes, history repeating itself. The question, I suppose, whether any lessons have been learned, we'll find out over the next couple of weeks. Micheál Lehane in Leinster House, thank you very much indeed.